From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call, 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, refreshing your brain. Now, how would you like to refresh your brain, Tom? Would you like to refresh it? Refreshing your brain. Maybe that's what sleep does.
My brain needs lots of refreshing.
We can all use refreshing your brain. And reducing sugar in packaged foods and drinks, what would that mean to the health of our society? How do we move forward with that? Some really good, interesting information.
Mm-hmm. And we have a yummy recipe today.
Well, I think it's yummy. Chicken empanadas. I don't know if you've ever had empanadas, but a couple of my kids lived in South America and Brazil, Argentina, and we have a great empanada stand at the farmer's market in Madison that I love. These are little kind of doughy things that are filled with delicious stuff, and they're baked or they're deep fried and they're delicious. We have a recipe for chicken empanadas. If you've ever wanted to experiment, as Tom does every single night in his kitchen, if you ever want to experiment, this is the empanada experiment for you.
I can't cook it, but my mouth is watering.
Your mouth is watering. That's what counts.
Let's get to the phones now, Zorba. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, we welcome our first caller, a listener in Dallas, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
And by the way, where is Dallas, Wisconsin? I mean, we know where Dallas, Texas is. Is it as big as Dallas, Texas? Like it's one of those secret cities that we've never seen?
Well, it is a secret city, but that's only just because basically no one lives there. it's about an hour or so north of Eau Claire in the Rice Lake area. That's kind of our little central hub.
Got you.
Yeah, so not quite as big as Dallas, Texas. But I am calling today in regards to some foot pain that I have been experiencing. So just a little bit of background. I ran cross country all 4 years of high school, and I absolutely loved it. And I know for a fact that my cross country coach is listening right now. About my junior year, the arches of my feet began to hurt. And so she had kind of chalked that up to be some sort of plantar fasciitis. Mm-hmm. And so she had me do various split stretches and massaging to help that. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that worked for the time being. But in recent months, I've noticed that it has come back, and I'm not sure why that is. I've had some lifestyle changes because I am now at UW-Madison. Mm-hmm. I'm a sophomore. I don't run as much anymore, but I have transitioned to lifting weights instead. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it. But, yes, like I said, the foot pain is coming back regardless of any type of shoe I wear. I do tend to wear more athletic sneaker type shoes because I thought that might help it. But still, I do feel some discomfort.
So I've got a very simple, quick question. Do you walk barefoot around your apartment? Do you walk just with socks on? Do you take your shoes off and walk around without a shoe?
I do, yes, when I'm at home.
That's the biggest issue that you have. That's the most important thing for plantar fasciitis. It's very, very important not to walk on the ground without something to basically push against. So I'll explain it. So the plantar fascia are in the bottom of the feet. They connect the toes to the heel, and we push against them. So flat feet are where you don't have that sort of bounce to it. And if you look at a good arch in a foot, is actually a bowstring, and you're kind of pushing against that bowstring. And what you want to do is you want to get rid of that inflammation. So my first suggestion to you, get a pair of something like Crocs or something like that. When you get up in the morning, you immediately put on your Crocs. You wear them all the time. In other words, you never walk barefoot unless you're in the shower, you have to, you're at the beach, you're outside, you know, playing in the grass. If not, you always have something to push against. That is the biggest thing of plantar fasciitis that people don't do. So you're wearing the right shoe with the athletic shoe, but you're not wearing any shoe at all when you're hanging out. And that's what you've got to do. And the second thing, for a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, get naproxen over-the-counter Aleve, double the dose in the bottle. They're 220-milligram tablets. Let's take 2 tablets twice a day. I tell people for 2 weeks to get the plantar fasciitis to settle down. But the biggest issue is you're walking on bare feet or just in your socks. That'll make a big difference. Now let me give you a personal story. I have plantar fasciitis. A number of years ago, it was really bothering me. I was walking around my house barefoot. As soon as I started getting Crocs or something else that have a little bounce, it went away. And it turned out I was able to ski again. I was worried about not skiing. So frankly, the biggest thing for you to do is simply not to aggravate it by walking on flat ground. And by the way, good sandals work out well. They're not just Crocs. You know, Birkenstocks, an athletic shoe, anything that has a give to it is going to work. But a regular house slipper is worthless, because if you look at a house slipper, there's nothing there. It kind of covers your foot and has no support to it at all.
Okay. Thank you.
And keep running. It's important. Or walking.
I will.
Or weightlifting. Got to stay healthy.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, I think there's an important point, too. He's a young college student. He did cross-country, which may have started and aggravated it. But plantar fasciitis is common throughout the ages. Young people, middle-aged people, or old folks like I am, and you're a Tom. I mean, you get plantar fasciitis.
Some of us are older than others.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
800-462-7413. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
My question is regarding osteoporosis. I'm a 67-year-old female recently diagnosed with osteoporosis, and I'm reluctant to take the medication they prescribed for me called Boniva. So are there any natural treatments for osteoporosis that don't involve medication?
Well, there are a few things. So first of all, there's mild osteoporosis, moderate osteoporosis, and severe. You could sort of look at it in a couple of different ways. So a couple of questions, because we care about osteoporosis only within the context of fractures. So do you smoke cigarettes?
No.
Good.
Never have.
Good. If you smoke cigarettes, that increases your risk of fracture. Are you a thin white woman?
Yes.
You are. So thinness also increases the risk of osteoporosis. And white people, Caucasians, are much more likely to have a hip fracture than African Americans and even than Asians. So you're at a higher risk from that. So if we look at the drugs that are used for osteoporosis, they're basically drugs that increase the bone density by about anywhere between 2 and 5%. The first drug in this class was called alendronate. Boniva is another drug in the class, and they all work in a very similar way. There's other drugs that supposedly increase calcium. They were a nasal drug, and I can't remember exactly what the name of it is, slipping my mind now. Doesn't work as well as essentially as the drug that you're talking about. So the natural way to try to help keep from having a hip fracture is, number one, making sure you have enough calcium. You don't want to fall below 1,000 milligrams a day. Natural calcium that you get from food is absorbed better than inorganic calcium. Calcium is an element. So you can take 1,000 milligram Tums a day, but you want to make sure you get calcium for your food. Do you like yogurt?
Yes, I eat yogurt daily.
It's a great source of calcium, roughly 400 milligrams in a container of yogurt. If you have one or two containers of yogurt or a big serving of yogurt every day, and maybe if you look at how much you're getting, as long as you're at about 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams a day, you're getting enough. What sort of exercise do you do?
Well, I'm a nurse. I'm on my feet 12 hours a day at work. And otherwise, I go to weightlifting classes and cardio mix classes and Zumba. Very active.
I mean, oh, my God. I mean, you're on your feet, as you said, as a nurse. So you're getting a lot of steps, undoubtedly a huge number of steps. Anything over about 4,000 steps a day is nice. And if you ever wore a pedometer or a Fitbit or anything like that?
Yes, I do 20,000 steps a day.
Tom is smiling at 20,000 steps a day.
Well,
so you're getting.
Yeah, I was very surprised that I even have osteoporosis.
Well,
considering all of
it. It's genetic. That's what it is. It's ultimately a genetic thing. So if you know, frankly, if you want to stay away from the pills, decrease the risk you're going to get a fracture. But frankly, exercise decreases the risk. Balance decreases the risk. You don't smoke cigarettes. You're getting enough calcium, and so I think. It's okay not to take the drugs. They just add a certain benefit to it. But a lot of people don't want to take it. And by the way, if you take the drug, you take it only for 5 years. There's no benefit for taking any of the drugs in the alendronate or Beneva class for more than 5 years. So I think in the wintertime, I would take 2,000 milligrams of vitamin D. That is the other thing I would say.
All right. Well, I think you've answered but my questions. I appreciate you taking your time to listen to me. So have a great day.
The pleasure is ours.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Now, Zorba, before we get back to the phones, brain refreshing, why the dreaming phase matters?
Yeah, would you like to refresh your brain?
Monica would love it.
Refresh
my brain.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Look at Tom's brain. It's refreshed. We just push a button and Tom goes, I'm here. I'm here. We all like to refresh our brains. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole issue about sleep. And very interesting, the more and more we learn about sleep, the more we find it's important. And when you think about it, I mean, there are disadvantages for going to sleep, right? Here it is. I mean, you're a caveman and a cavewoman, and you go to sleep, and all of a sudden there are animals around. I mean, why do we have to go to sleep in the first place? Mm-hmm. And why do all animals sleep? And humans, I mean, 8 hours a day, a third of our life is spent in sleeping. It must obviously have a reason behind it. And now they're looking to try to figure out what the reasons are. Now, there's some theories that this has, which I think is correct. It has to do with neuronal development because you look at infants. We have a new grandchild, Zoe, and she's just a few weeks old. And you look at infants and they sleep like 20 hours a day. Mm-hmm. You know, wake, eat, poop. Sleep, repeat. Mm-hmm. That's literally what they do. And of all those things, sleep is the thing they do more than anything else because their neurons are working so. So these are scientists who have wondered exactly what is going on. And they've looked at animal models and they've looked at blood flow between REM sleep and non-REM sleep, blood flow in the brain. And one theory is that blood flow in your brain, as it decreases because of cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's, that may be the reason why we begin to lose memory. In other words, it might be a blood flow issue. And what they found was a massive flow of red blood cells in the capillaries during REM sleep. Then in non-REM sleep, there's not an increase in blood flow, but in REM sleep, which is where we do a lot of dreaming, there's an increase in blood flow. And that blood flow and the rebound blood flow may be something that's extremely important for some of these blood vessels to make sure that we don't develop dementia. Now, there's an important bottom point here. We don't understand the precursors of dementia. We know that dementia, of course, is a problem as we get older. We know memory loss is a problem as we get older. We also know that older people do not sleep as deeply as younger people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about exercise, we talk about diet, but how often do we talk about sleep? And in our society, the idea is if you sleep too much, you take a nap in the middle of the day, you're lazy. I mean, where'd that come from? You know, this Calvinistic tradition that you've got to work hard and you sleep as little as possible is really something that may not be good for our brain. This research shows sleep may be good because especially REM sleep increases blood flow to the brain, and that may help kickstart your memory.
1-800-462-7413 is our number, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we have a voicemail from a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hi, Zorba. I have a question in regards to posture. I drive to work 40 minutes and back 40 minutes. Now, I've noticed that my shoulders are getting increasingly rounded and they feel tight. And the muscles connecting the pecs and shoulders seem to be very tight, too. I'm wondering what kind of exercises I can do to alleviate this posture issue. Thank you. Have a great day.
Oh, I've got some great ideas. Now, what do you think? Your posture is really good, Tom.
Okay. I've never had that compliment
before.
You see,
you now have a posture compliment. In school, do you remember where they told you to sit up straight?
Sure.
I mean, why'd they do that? They'd say, don't slouch. You'll have a round shoulder. Yeah. I mean, you know, I still remember Miss Schutte, the most unfavored Schutte, saying, Mr. Pastor, you're slouching. I mean, I thought, oh, you know.
Well, if she didn't do that, you probably would slouch all the time.
That was the whole idea behind it. Yeah. But the reality is when we're in a car, it is a big issue. And I've got a number of good ideas. Quite often when I'm talking about a car seat, I don't mean a kid's car seat, but things that you put in your car that you can buy on the web and in regular stores, which basically can make your posture better. They're firm seats, and quite often you don't have a firm enough seat in your car unless you've got an upper-level car that has an electronic seat that you can actually alternate. That's one thing to do. But from a posture exercise point of view, I'll tell you what I like. Go to YouTube. Tom, how often do you go to YouTube?
Never.
Never. But some people, millions of people, do go to YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and you put in Bob and Brad posture exercises. Now, Bob and Brad, I've been in love. They're two Wisconsin guys, Wisconsin boys, who are actually physical therapists. They have a whole bunch of exercises, back pain, shoulder pain, leg pain, arm pain. I think they're really they have the best stuff on the net. I love their stuff. Do Bob and Brad posture exercises. My guess is they've got one. I haven't looked it up. You know, I used to tell people go and get an article on exercise and how to do it, but frankly, YouTube is so much better when you see something going on and somebody tells you how to do it, it really works much better. So we're going to have some Bob and Brad exercises on YouTube or something that's very similar if you come to ZorbaPastor.org. And of course, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413 is our number. Before the break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite hand raisers, the Grammar Police. Actually, Zorba, this one comes from the Orientation Police. A listener named Joy sent us the following email. Dear Zorba, I love trying your interesting and tasty recipes. Well, all of them except those containing smelt. But I got
The smelt are running at some point. The smelt are running.
But she says, I got into some trouble the other day when following your instructions. It was okay when I sliced an eggplant vertically, as you told us. Standing upright at the kitchen counter was a breeze. Slicing a zucchini horizontally, as you instructed, was something else, though. I found myself prone on the lounge floor with cutting board and knife in hand. When my husband arrived home, the picture was not enhanced by the cat sitting on my back and the dog sniffing around my head.
It's not funny, but I am laughing. Sorry.
My husband's dry question of a new yoga pose, dear, put the tin lid on it. So, here's my point, Doc. Slicing a vegetable horizontally or vertically has no meaning. I don't have a medical degree, and I can't play the accordion, but I would submit you mean widthwise or lengthwise. I'm not going to lie. Wilfred Bermley's oatmeal recipes are a lot easier to follow, if not nearly as tasty. We love you, Doc.
You know, what can I say?
Did something Zorba say not quite cut it? Join the Grammar Police by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org and, of course, through Facebook. And what we really need is a Grammar Police badge, which is similar to what I used to get as a kid, which was a Rudy Kazooty whistle.
Our delicious recipe coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next caller, chicken empanadas.
Now, have you ever had an empanada?
I don't know.
You don't know. Do you know what an empanada is? Obviously not.
No. Right.
So it's a little toasted or deep fried dough that is filled with stuff. Do you like dumplings, things that are filled in dumplings?
Yeah.
It's obviously not stuff. Do you like wonton? Wonton. But anyway, if you've never tried making an empanada and you've made wontons, we used to make fried wontons for our kids, you might want to consider this recipe. Really, it's a wonderful recipe, and it's a good recipe to experiment with. It is not that complex, although there are lots of ingredients.
So a lot of stuff here, yeah.
Well, you know, anything over five, Tom, you call a lot. You call a lot. All right, start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
1/2 cup of onion minced. Any onion will do.
1/2 cup onion minced.
1 red bell pepper minced.
A red bell pepper minced.
And for color, an orange or a yellow bell pepper minced. If not, a green bell pepper minced will also work. They're cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
4 garlic cloves minced.
Garlic cloves, rather.
Mm-hmm. If you like cilantro, 2 tablespoonfuls of cilantro. If you don't like cilantro, use 2 tablespoonfuls of parsley. 2 cups of shredded chicken breast raw. So you've got to take chicken breast, chop it up or shred it.
Mm-hmm.
2 teaspoons of chicken bouillon.
Mm-hmm.
1 cup of water.
Cup of water.
Tablespoonful of tomato paste.
Big tea tomato paste.
Teaspoon of onion powder and garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of each.
Little tea onion powder, a little tea garlic powder.
An egg, which you're going to use for egg wash.
An egg.
And 10 empanada dough shells. Now, if you can't find those are like wonton shells, you can use store-bought pie crust, and you can cut it into squares, and it will work just as good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Preheat the oven to 375 degrees. Then in a large skillet, heat 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil over medium heat. Add the onions and peppers, saute until softened. It's going to be about 5 minutes over medium heat. Then add the garlic and the cilantro or parsley and stir it until fragrant, which is about 1 minute. Then add the chicken, water, chicken bouillon, tomato paste, onion powder, garlic powder, and salt. Bring the liquid to a simmer, stirring often. Allow it to cook until the liquid has evaporated. You want it to cook. You don't want the mixture to be dry, but you want it to cook through. That's going to take about 5 to 8 minutes. Then, working with 1 prepared dough at a time or a square, add a heaping 1/3 cup filling into 1 side of the dough, and then using a homemade dough or pie crust, roll it into a very thin 6 to 7 inch disc. So you're basically putting this into a disc, and then you're smooshing it together so it looks like a half moon. You want them to look like a half moon or a half square. And once you kind of look at it, go to YouTube and see how to actually roll the dough. It's really, really good. This is a wonderful filling inside. Then wet a pastry brush with the egg wash, which is basically an egg with 1 tablespoonful of water. Dampen the inside using a fork. Put it firmly together. And once again, it's a little complex the first time you do it. You're going to get your hands messy and everything else. But once you make these, you're going to love it. Brush each empanada with an egg wash. Bake for 35 minutes until golden brown and serve. Now, the real trick is folding it and getting it to stick together. And we made wontons with our kids all the time. Once you figure out how to do it, it's a wonderful thing. And it's kind of a great thing to have with children. And it's kind of a fun thing. This is a wonderful celebration dish that you should try.
Yeah.
Okay, enough on me. Want the recipe? You know how to do it, Tom, don't you?
Tell me.
Go to the web at ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or find us through Facebook. And unfortunately, we don't send the recipes in the mail anymore because it costs postage. How much does a postage stamp cost anyway? I mean, I have them at home, and they're, you know, they're called? Not Everclear. Oh, no, that's a drink. They're called Forever Stamps, and they last forever.
I would guess so. 800-462-7413 is our number. Question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hello, Zorba. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Thank you. Very good. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just accidentally came in contact with your radio show while I was driving, and I liked it so much. So, such a useful information.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. So, my question was about perfumes. I'm a big fan of perfumes, but when I try to... So, I have a habit of going into, you know, the composition of everything, like when I buy shampoos or body washes and all that, because I want to see what they're putting it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't find any composition for perfumes, and I read it's the industry secret, actually.
Right.
So
right.
they don't want to show anybody. So my actual question was, I try to find out in literature and everywhere, like, is there any health effects? I'm not talking about the perfumes that are made up from essential oils. I'm talking about perfumes that are kind of, you know, like Versace or Gucci, or like, they are kind of known companies. They are pretty expensive, and there is no compound that is organic in nature. So I just want to know, I was curious your views about that.
You're 100% correct. We actually don't know, because perfumes are covered on the Food and Drug Act, and they are cosmetics, and they do not have to tell you what's in the perfume. They don't have to tell you what's in the lipstick when you have lipstick, which turns out to have plastic particles in many forms of lipstick. So the fact is, they could have something in there that's detrimental, and we don't have the foggiest idea. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, we use perfumes all the time. If they're in food, it's one thing, but when they're used in cosmetics, they don't have to tell you what's in there. And so you might think, well, it's a big company like Gucci and Versace, because they're going to use things that we know are safe. But the answer is, we're really not sure. Now, there has been research done on cosmetics, because there have been people who have been very interested in this question. But it hasn't been done on all forms of cosmetics. And the answer is, we don't really know. So, you know, I'm not against perfumes at all. My wife wears a perfume from Estee Lauder that she loves. I like when she puts on the perfume. She's going to put on cosmetics. But the reality is, we don't know what's in that stuff, and we don't know if there are any long-term effects. So you're right. If you're doing research of what perfume or aftershave lotion you use, you can't tell what's in it. And so the answer is, I don't have an answer. That's the answer.
I know. It's a difficult question, but what I am seeing right now, that this industry is moving towards, little bit towards plants, because there is a new generation of perfumes I am seeing on the shelves, and they are boasting of using like plant products or what we call essential oils.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they are expensive. Mm-hmm. There is no doubt in that. Like if I buy shaving cream now, or what we call pre-shave oils or post-shaving creams and all that stuff, if you find good stuff in that, and those are kind of shea butter or all those kind of stuff, those products are way expensive than regular companies who are just putting some chemicals in that. So that's one thing.
That is true. But I do want to caution you. Just because it says they're not putting anything in there, that, you know, they may say use plant substitutes, using this and using that. We don't know if they're using other chemicals in addition to that, because they don't have to disclose that. So they may be using organic plant products, but in order to get it to go on your face and sell, they may be using something else. That's an important issue. It's still buyer beware. So the reality is, you may be paying more money and you may be getting a better product, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100%
yeah,
sure.
It's still an open question. But yes, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
For your time.
And thank you very much for the compliment, and thank you so much for listening.
Appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. 800-462-7413. Okay, now, Zorba, we have a voicemail from Waterloo, Wisconsin.
My question is, Dr. Zorba was just talking about intermittent fasting, and I just had a question about, if you're an athlete and you exercise every day, minimum of an hour, closer to an hour and a half, is intermittent fasting still a good idea? Okay, thank you.
You know, there's been a lot of research, a lot of interest in intermittent fasting and whether or not you lose weight. And some people find it really does make a difference. You know, they eat breakfast before 8 o'clock and they have nothing to eat until the evening time. And for some people, that works. For some people, it doesn't work, by the way. A lot of truckers don't eat during the daytime and then they're famished. It's a very common problem with truckers, because they're on the road all the time. They're sitting there in their mobile and they're in their rig, and they intermittently only fast, but in fact, then they eat too much later on. So you've got to look what's right for you. Certainly, athletes can intermittently fast. People who are not athletic can intermittently fast. And you've got to see if that helps you get to your ideal weight. And the ideal weight for many people, not everyone, for many people is the weight. If they were at a good weight when they finished high school or 1 year after high school, that often ends up being your ideal body weight. Now, I'm not talking about people who are overweight when they graduate high school, but people who are of a normal weight. But yeah, sure, you can do intermittent fasting. Absolutely. See if it works for you. See if it makes you feel good and keep doing your athletic things that you're doing.
My guess is you weigh now what you weighed when you graduated from high school.
I weigh pretty much so. I weigh a few pounds more than I do, but not more than like
Yeah, me too. Same thing. Yeah.
Oh, you weigh the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've been at this weight. I mean, now keep in mind, I can gain weight. So we were just up in Door County with my son, Zach, and my daughter-in-law, Louisa, and we had cookies because we're there, we're celebrating, and I read how many calories were in a cookie. So basically, two cookies were 150 calories. That's as much as in a Coke. And I thought to myself, I could have easily eaten 4 or 6 cookies. I mean, cookies are an excellent way to gain weight if you want to gain weight. So I've got to stay away from Oreos and these Keebler Snackers because in the end, I can't control myself. When I had cookies in my office like that, I gained 5 or 10 pounds.
I don't believe that.
No, I did. This is years ago. I gained weight and I thought, what am I doing? Where's it coming from? And then I realized if for me, it was the cookies. For other people, it may be the soda.
I can eat cookies or anything and I never gain a pound.
Is there any cookie you love, really love?
Pretty much all of them, I think.
Yeah, but you don't love them. I mean, you couldn't open up.
No,
could you open up Oreos and eat like 8 of them?
No.
Oh, I could eat them.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, as you know, we get so many questions from our wonderful listeners, but we also get calls from listeners who just want to share a comment or a health tip. So it's time again for that segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments, people calling us with their health tips.
Thanks, we appreciate it.
Okay, Zorba, first up, let's hear from a listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
I'm calling to comment because I'm 70 years old, a major boomer. I used to teach high school. I told my kids I was going to outlive them because we were the busiest generation in the world. I took exercise, I ran, I walked, and I lived in the discos. The strongest muscle in my body was my heart, and I think I'm living on it still. The aerobic power that we got from the amount of dancing we did, and we danced a lot, and the amount of running we did, and we ran, and we walked. I was in Chicago, and I had that beautiful lake shore. I walked a lot. I walked everywhere. Plus, I was broke. So that's my comment. I love your show, Dr. Zorba. Thank you.
I was in Chicago and I was broke, so I walked a lot. Now, you know what? That is the primo boomer. I mean, if you're looking for a boomer that is out there, you know, sort of the statue, I am the boomer's boomer. That was a primo boomer. I loved it. The discos. I lived in the discos. Can you just kind of picture who this guy was? I mean, don't you have an image?
Yeah.
I definitely have an image. So, and you know what? He was right. The boomers are healthy. Of course, not all the boomers are healthy, but many of them are. So keep dancing, man. Keep dancing.
And finally, Zorba, on a recent show, a listener emailed us with a boating tip. They used to work for the Department of Natural Resources, and a colleague had told them that a high percentage, 40 to 60% of the male bodies recovered from drownings had their zippers down. So, Zorba,
it's really not funny. Maybe I shouldn't be laughing.
You agreed that the DNR should do a public service announcement about this.
That's right.
You asked our listeners to send us what the jingle might be for that commercial. We got some great responses, including this one from Bonnie in St. Augustine, Florida. Put on your jacket before you unpack it. We also heard from Linda in Boonton, New Jersey, who came up with this to the tune of Row, Row, Row Your Boat. drinking, drinking, drinking on your boat. Then you gotta pee. Wear your life jacket or never leave the sea.
I love it.
Thanks, Linda. But this one from a Madison, Wisconsin listener might be our favorite. Let's hear it.
Hi, my name is Aviva from Madison, Wisconsin, and I have a little jingle for the boat thing. Pee off the boat with a device to float. Thank you very much.
Well, this certainly got a lot of interest from our listeners. You know, if you ever have a comment, go to ZorbaPastor.org, and you can always comment on Facebook. We love your comments.
Okay, Zorba, that's a great jingle, but what if we take it a step further and add some music to it? Our producer, Carl, likes to make silly things, so here's what he came up with.
Pee off the boat with a device to float. Pee off the boat with a device to float. Pee off the boat with a device to float. Pee off the boat with a device to float.
I love it. You know, what we need is the YouTube video that goes along with this. So we're actually standing on a boat and doing it. Tom, you and I can actually do this standing on a boat sometime.
Okay.
I didn't sell that, did I?
More of your calls to come, another interesting topic to discuss, and more listener emails as well. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. But Zorba, before our next call, reducing sugar in packaged foods can prevent disease in millions?
Oh, yeah. That is a big issue. So how much soda do you drink?
How much soda?
Yeah. Do you drink soda?
I do, yeah. Maybe one every other day.
One every other day, which actually a lot of people drink two or three soda. And when I talk about soda, you're talking about like a bottle or a can. You're not talking about a 64-ounce Slurpee, right?
Right.
You know, an ounce of soda is a teaspoon of sugar. And we eat an enormous amount of sugar. And we need an enormous amount of high fructose corn syrup, which, by the way, if you read labels, they don't say high fructose corn syrup most of the time. Now they say HFCS because the feds have allowed them to put it on it. You look at it and you go, oh, there's no sugar in this product. What's HFCS, which is high fructose corn syrup? Well, this particular study looked at reducing sugar in prepared foods by about 20% and reducing sugar in beverages by 40% and calculated that over a period of time, you could save literally millions of lives because you're not producing diabetes, you're not producing that much hypertension from obesity, you're not producing cardiovascular disease. And the fact is, we could reduce sugar in packaged foods a lot. So I know you eat prepackaged dinners, what we used to call TV dinners. I don't think that's what they call them. Do you ever look at the package?
No, not really. I just look how much time do I put on the microwave.
Right. But you don't have a weight problem, do you?
No, I don't.
So if you have a weight problem, you're often looking at a package to see how many calories there are. Lean Cuisine, you know, is this sort of premier company that started that whole idea that you can have a package and you won't have as many calories. And that's because they don't have as much fat and they don't have as much sugar. But we're looking from a sugar point of view. We've gotten used to eating sugar. Now, a few years ago, I hiked in Tibet, hiked in Nepal, came back after a month of eating basically beans and rice and other things on the road, didn't eat typical American food, and everything tasted sweet and greasy to me. When I got back into the U.S., I wanted a Big Mac. I had a Big Mac attack, and it tasted sweet. Why? Because obviously they use sugar in the stuff that they put on a Big Mac. So the reality is we ought to start reducing sugar in, you know, in our diet. And I think everyone as an individual person can look at the cookies and the cakes and the drinks that they're eating and saying, how can I cut out sugar? Because when you cut out sugar, it's better for your health. And remember, too much sugar is essentially an American thing. Try to cut down on it. And according to this study, it'll make a difference in deaths and cut down in millions and millions and millions of lives.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, back to the phones now. A listener with us in Westport, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks
Fine.
For taking my call.
Yeah, how can we help?
So I just a question related to a recent condition that I've been dealing with. 44 years old, and about 6 months ago, found out I have diverticulosis because of what was known to me at that point as diverticulitis, of the condition which was unknown to me, had presented a number of symptoms. So I dealt with an initial bout of that, recovered through antibiotics and diet and some other things, and now it's about 6 months later, and I've had a tinge of the same thing. So preventatively, I'm back on antibiotics and trying to watch my diet, starting with a liquid diet. So my question is in relation to this, is it normal from the onset or realization of this condition, which from my understanding, something that can exist for a while, to have repeated episodes like this? And if so, what might the future of this condition look like for me, and what things would you advise to help counteract that?
Oh, sure. So diverticulosis, and when it's inflamed, diverticulitis, is become a really common thing in our society. And these are little pockets that are in your colon. And so they're little pockets, and basically they become inflamed. There used to be an old doctor's tale that peanuts and seeds would get stuck in the pockets and cause inflammation. We now know that is not the case at all, that things actually don't get stuck. I mean, they do get stuck. The pockets actually swell up, but it has nothing to do with peanuts and popcorn. We used to say, no popcorn for the rest of your life. No tomatoes for the rest of your life. And people were put on these crazy diets, no one bothering actually to actually do research and find out, hey, that is not the case at all. Once you have it, once you have the pockets, you have them forever. So the real issue is, how do you keep those pockets clear? And most people with diverticulosis never have inflammation. So from a preventive point of view, the theory is that if you have fiber, lots of insoluble fiber, that you'll sort of sweep those pockets through. It's probably not the case that it really sweeps through, but it probably has something to do with the biome, the bacteria that live in our intestine. So have you ever heard of Metamucil?
I have. In fact, I remember being on the counter growing up.
Well, it should be on your counter too. So basically, Metamucil are psyllium seeds. Metamucil, the name brand Metamucil, tastes better than the generic Metamucil. But for the most part, it's really the same. So these are psyllium seeds. Psyllium, by the way, comes mostly from India. They grow it. It is a husk of a plant called psyllium. And basically, what you do is you take a scoop of Metamucil every morning, once a day in the morning. You can also do it in the evening. Put it in water, mix it around right away. It does not absorb, and so it tastes gritty because it is insoluble fiber. Citracil, which is another thing made of cellulose, does not work the same way. So you take Metamucil every day, drink a glass of water, Metamucil. If there's powder left in there and you feel like drinking it, do that. And that often can make a big difference in preventing recurrences of diverticulitis, which is the inflammation. Because basically it's fiber, fiber, fiber. That's
okay.
That's the most important thing. Now, your next question is, can you get it again? Some people have bouts of it for a period of time, and then it dies down, never comes back. Some people have bouts of it on and off, and that's where you need a good relationship with your doctor so you've got antibiotics on hand in case it actually, actually flares up. And yes, you're sort of surprised that you get it. How'd you find out that you had it? Did you have a colonoscopy?
No, it was I was actually traveling for work. My stomach started hurting, went on for a couple of days. I started waking up at night with fever and chills. And and so I didn't know I had it, ended up in an ER. My father actually has it, which I remembered through the process and happened to note. And so they did a CT scan, and based on the conditions and all that, they confirmed it. So it was, I didn't know I had it until I had, it had gotten to that point initially, and that was about 6 months ago.
And by the way, that is not unusual. Most people with diverticulosis, these pockets, never have symptoms. But the answer for you is fiber on a regular basis, and then having some anti, especially if you're traveling. Do you travel with your business?
I do, for work, yes. Under normal circumstances.
So what you want to have is you want to have prescription antibiotics with you from your doctor. So either you want to have a prescription on hand to be able to take at a Walgreens or CVS Pharmacy, which is nationwide, or you just want to have them with you. So in case you've got a flare, you can start on the antibiotics, because the sooner you start on the antibiotics, the better off you are. But as I said, Metamucil, Metamucil, Metamucil.
That's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care. Thanks. All thanks for your call.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking in. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let me find my Slim Jim so we can pry open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a listener email. Cindy in St. Louis, Missouri, sent us the following question. Dear Dr. Zorba, I've been a faithful listener for several years and really value your opinion when I found myself in this conundrum. I was at a grocery store shopping while wearing my mask. I had to sneeze. Do I sneeze with my mask on? That seems just gross. Is it okay to lower my mask and sneeze in my elbow, as my teachers have taught me? What's the right protocol?
What is the right protocol? What sort of regulations do we have as per sneezes? Now, if you're on an airplane and you start sneezing and you take off your mask, the steward or stewardess will come up and undoubtedly say, you can't take off your mask. You can't do that. The reality is, on an airplane is different than when you're in a grocery store walking around. So I think you've got to make your decision at the time. But I think the protocol changes depending on where you are and what's going on. I definitely wouldn't stand in line at the checkout counter sneezing into either the mask or my elbow, because those people might actually be really upset.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba. He's happy to fire an answer right back at you. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, here's a voicemail from a listener in Waupaca, Wisconsin.
Hi. I want to know what you think about microdosing of hallucinogens such as peyote or acid, and how you think that might be beneficial to some people who have psychiatric problems. I love you guys. I listen to you all the time, every time. Bye.
This is such an important point. In fact, if we look at LSD initially and the research done before Timothy Leary went off the rails and really destroyed all the research, it was to use for psychiatric disorders and to see whether or not it would work. And because of the whole thing with Timothy Leary for 50 years, no one was able to actually touch the drug. And now there's research being done on microdosing of psilocybin, a peyote. I'm not sure if LSD is in there, too. It probably is. UW is one of the centers of research, and in Madison, Wisconsin, there's a lot of support for that. And the reality is, yes, there's some evidence that it may work for PTSD. There's some evidence that it may work with people with severe depression. Look at what we do for people with severe depression, where antidepressants don't work. We do electroshock therapy, and we put electrodes on their head and put an electric current into their brain, which really helps for people with severe depression. Yet we're afraid to try microdosing of hallucinogens because they might go off the rails. Please, we need more research on this. I think it needs to be studied more and more, and the research on it is very, very interesting and promising. And how microdosing will fit into our armamentarium of helping people may be quite interesting. I know a number of musicians and artists who microdose and say very small doses, not enough to actually give them, put them on an acid trip or a psilocybin trip or a mescaline trip, that say it really helps them create. What's wrong with that? Something that we should look at with our society. And the feds have to get onto the other side of it because they put this in the same class as heroin. Come on. Heroin, opioids, kill people, psilocybin, mescaline, acid, and microdosing do not kill people.
Interesting research. Yeah. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox again and share a listener question. The following email came to us from Brad, who writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, is olive oil good for you or just less bad for you than butter or other cooking oils? I ask because I recently became a member of the Sourdough of the Month Club, and I've had olive oil instead of butter on my bread, but I'm not sure that it's better than butter, or if it's good for me and should be added to my diet elsewhere."
Olive oil is good for you. It is beneficial, and we think it's not just a better. We don't just think that it's a substitute for butter because fats are bad. We now know there are good fats, and olive oil is one of the good fats. So have olive oil every day, and you will live longer.
Have a question for the good doc? I'll bet he'll be happy to answer it. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stay well, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget you can call us anytime and leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.